once again. It is the Pride of Detroit PODcast. I hope I have this microphone set up properly this time. We were sounding real awkward last time, but that's no... Okay, I'm on it now. I'm Chris Perfett, the adequate host at Chris Perfett, P-E-R-F-E-T-T. Starting adequate as always. Some people really wanting to be me to be fairly adequate, and I'm showing it right now because I'm getting incredibly distracted. Let's just get into the rest of the introductions. Jeremy Reisman is here at Detroit Online. How are you doing, Jeremy? Please talk for a little bit so I can sneeze real quick.
I'm doing all right. I am in a half-empty apartment as I prepare to move. I have to be out of this apartment by next week. And then I'll be on the road the following week. Exciting stuff.
The road to WrestleMania.
Nope. Yes. The road to training camp.
Which is also WrestleMania.
Nope.
Ryan Matthews. Back is the motherfucking rock guy. At Ryan underscore POD. Training camp is just WrestleMania, isn't it, Ryan?
Let me answer him. Nope.
Ryan.
Hi. Hi, everybody. I'm here.
You going to answer it, or is you going to let Jeremy steal your voice?
He's just the boss. I'm not going to talk over him.
Fair enough.
But yeah, we're on the road to WrestleMania.
Nope.
Yeah. So weird how he just tried getting... I was like, hey, we've got nothing else to talk about.
In this. When they say like, oh, stop talking about wrestling. There's a Lions podcast. And I'm like, oh, that's actually probably a pretty good
Okay. Episode. Well, you know what? Hey, let's get into the Lions news of the week.
All
what
right.
is it? What is it, Jeremy?
We just finished. Didn't you hear it? I just finished it.
See, and here I'm like, here going into the planning, I'm like, hey, let's talk about World Cup. There's nothing else going on. And you're like, nope. And you know what? Just means it's time to drop the music.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9.
All right, let's start our list count. List cast. Continuing on, we did wide receivers last week. Had a lot of opinions about that. Ryan did not have a list cast together. This week, it's cornerbacks. Do you have a list cast, Ryan?
I know we're doing one.
Okay, let's just leave it like that. Now, we're going to try a different format this time to make it a little shorter. As we can tell, we don't really have too much this POD cast. We are doing list cast, we're doing Wayback Machine, and then we're doing mailbag, and maybe we'll do like a grab bag in there, some other stuff going on in the wide, wide world of sports. There isn't really much in Lions news other than a lot of Lions fans on Twitter getting mad about Matt Stafford and comparisons. So it is officially the end of June, pretty much, is what I'm saying. With that in mind, this week we are doing cornerbacks. Now, as I said, we're doing a different format this time. I'm going to let Jeremy go first. He is going to give me 10 to 6 on his list of cornerbacks. And then at the end of that, if we have questions or want him to explain a certain person real quick, he will be able to do it. Otherwise, I want no more than one sentence on each of your entries, Jeremy. You got that?
Yes, sir, sir. Yes, sir.
Sir. I'll never be called sir again in my life. All right, start us off.
All right, well, I'm going to preface this, and I know this is already going against rule, by saying by bringing up Darius Slay's list, because I think it's kind of interesting to compare what he's got to what I've got. Certainly, he knows more about the cornerback position than I do.
Hold up. He had a list, and we're not having him on for list cast?
I couldn't get him, you know?
Damn.
Back in January, he posted his top 4. He said 5, but it's really just 4. He goes, Aqib Talib, number 1, Richard Sherman, number 2, Patrick Peterson, number 3, Chris Harris, number 4. And then he says, number 5 can be a lot of guys. I not only don't have any of those 4 in my top 5, but I only have 3 of those 4 on my list at all. Which is interesting. But he also says, these 4 guys have been doing it for the longest on the highest level. You can't disrespect guys like that. That's where I think my list differs. Is I'm not going based on full resume. I'm going based on what I think they're going to play like in 2018. So I have
You're going on young blood hype.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Kind of like my wide receiver list. So with that in mind, number 10, Arizona Cardinals cornerback Patrick Peterson. Love the guy. He's been one of my favorite players. He's one of the few guys who gave Calvin Johnson fits when he was in the league. But he's old. Number 9, Chris Harris, another guy on Darius Slay's list. Again, he's done it for a while, but to me, it's not that he's not good anymore. It's just that there's some of these younger players that are really rising up quickly, and quarterbacks can really fall off the mark very quickly. Like, we talk about a guy like Darrell Revis, number one at the game for a while, and then completely
one sentence.
Yeah, stop.
You can do these later.
That's not how this works. We're discussing.
I know, but I want you to get through it, and then we can get into these comments.
Or forget about it. Anyways, Aqib Talib, my number 8. Marcus Peters, my number 7. Xavier Rhodes, my number 6.
All right, now you can get into notes that you might have.
Those are good cornerbacks. I like them.
So you got Xavier Rhodes at 6. I didn't see Darius Slay on this. Am I assuming you're putting Rhodes on here, but you're putting Slay obviously probably higher?
We'll discuss that when I go through my entire list.
All right. I'm just trying to. Ryan, do you have any notes you want to add about what he was just saying?
Who does he have 10 through 6? I didn't even hear.
Well, of course you didn't. Patrick Peterson, number 10. Chris Harris, number 9. Aqib Talib, number 8. Marcus Peters, number 7. Xavier Rhodes, number 6.
One of those guys isn't on my list.
Yep. Same. All right, fine. I'll do this. I'll try to show you how it's done. Number 10, Aqib Talib. Really good. Getting old, but you know what? Still, he ran back 103-yard interception last year. Wah. Number 9. Don't think anyone else has named him. Patrick Robinson, probably the best slot corner right now with a Super Bowl winning team. Number 8, Casey Hayward, stepped up quite well last year. Not much else to say there. Number 7, Darius Slay. Probably lower than some of the other guys, but I've got good reasons for that. And my number 6, Chris Harris. Old, still doing it, probably getting downgraded on some other lists here because he's now playing for the Broncos, who are tradash, but he's good. There. That's what I've got.
Not bad.
Not bad. We're going to talk about Darius Slay now, or you, why don't we just let Ryan? Ryan, why don't you do your 10 to 6 then? And then we can get, yeah.
For sure. So I have at number 10, I have Patrick Peterson. He's a guy who I thumped for a long time, but I think Father Time's finally catching up with him. Number 9, I have Aqib Talib. Be interesting to see how he does in Los Angeles, especially. I mean, he played really well with Chris Harris, but now he has who's the other guy that's in town there in Los Angeles? This is all one sentence.
Yeah, it's not Casey. It's not Trevor Williams.
No, it's Marcus Peters.
Marcus Peters. Yeah.
So that'll be interesting. So he was my number 9. Number 8 is Xavier Rhodes, Marvin Jones' favorite child. And number 7 is Chris Harris Jr. I know Jeremy mentioned about how he may be getting a little bit older, but I think he can still do it. He's still really super impressive. And then I'm giving you my number 6 too, right?
Yep.
My number 6 is, this is going to be kind of surprising. AJ Bouye is my number 6.
Okay.
He could have been higher.
You think Xavier Rhodes is Marvin Jones' favorite son because he abuses him? That doesn't seem like very lovable behavior.
It is,
it's tough love.
Tough love. Thank you, Chris.
Okay.
Anything else? No? I've changed this format up to see if we can actually like yell at each other more. It's like you've got a guy too low or whatever.
That moment is lost. Like, can you name what Ryan said as his number 9 guy now?
Maybe.
No, you can't because you can't.
Maybe.
Let's hear it again.
I know it because I wrote it down. It's Patrick Peterson, 10. Aqib Talib, 9. Xavier Rhodes, 8.
Yeah, I think that's about right for Aqib Talib, though. So, like, I mean, again, I get that he's getting up there in age, but just...
No, I'm just saying this format's tough for debate when we're
naming
5 guys off at a time.
Well, you've got them all written down, so why don't you be the police?
Because I'm too lazy to be the police right now.
I promise we're podcasting right now.
All right, fine. We'll do different for the top 5. But just to say, we are now 7 minutes in, so that is good. We are doing good on time for once. Actually, 10 minutes in. Whatever. All right, fine. Jeremy, back to you. Let's just do, why don't you just read off your 5-1, and you get a little longer now for each guy.
Two sentences?
If you ask nicely.
Sure.
All right, my number 5, Jalen Ramsey. Not even my highest Jaguars cornerback listed on this list. Because of someone else that Ryan already named. Hint, hint. Jalen Ramsey, 4th in passer rating allowed last year. 7th in catch rate. Also pretty high up there on the interception list, if I'm not mistaken. Let me take a quick look. Jalen Ramsey. I don't know. Yeah, he had 4. He had 4. Pretty good. Half as good as Darius Slay, but pretty good. Number 4, Marshawn Lattimore. This is a guy who I think is a tiny bit overhyped just because of how good he was to start his career, but he's still a damn good cornerback. I can't deny his accomplements so far.
And now we're diverting from format already, but I will jump in because I wanted to seed Marshawn Lattimore on mine, but I'm definitely on that side of worrying about him being too overhyped for one rookie year. And as you'll see on mine, like I think I'm here with you on a similar Jaguar situation, but what is there to buy into Marshawn Lattimore?
Dude was the 3rd best cornerback in terms of passer rating allowed. PFF, I think, had him very, very high as well. What was his? Yeah, he's number 4 in PFF. Dude's only, 21 years old or something? 22 years old? He's got all the skills, man.
Fair enough.
He's got it all. Number 3, Darius Slay. I don't think I need to justify him being on this list. Dude slayed out last year. Finally got some ball-playing skills in there. 8 interceptions, led the league by 8 in terms of pass breakups as well. Dude is killing it, and I think you're going to see a lot of change in how quarterbacks are going to play against him this year now that he's really broken onto the scene. Number 2, Casey Hayward. As previously mentioned, dude is crazy. Number 1 PFF guy. Last year, 96.4 overall grade from Casey Hayward. And, I mean, I don't know. What else can you say about the dude? 4 interceptions as well. He's just really good. He's really good. And then my number 1, AJ Bouye.
Wow.
Yeah.
Nice. When you said it was gonna be another Jaguars cornerback, I thought it was gonna be DJ Hayden.
Bouye, 6 interceptions, 3rd in the league. Number 1 PFF? Wait, yeah, I think
First in the passer rating allowed, too. Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. 1st in passer rating. I was 12th in PFF's rating, but
2nd in interception rate, too, at something I think Ryan will appreciate at 6.9%.
The tricky thing, though, thank you. The tricky thing here, though, is like when you say interceptions and passer rating, when you, those technically are 2 different stats, but passer rating is so drastically affected by interceptions. It's just kind of another way to say interceptions.
Yeah, but it's more of a combined up there with everything else, but sure. Yeah.
But yeah, AJ Bouye killing it on a really good defense. I think he would kill it on any kind of defense because
is that the best secondary right now?
Yeah.
In the NFL, the Jaguars secondary?
It might just be the best defense too.
Really?
They did add Don Carey too.
The illustrious Don Carey coming to Jacksonville. Sample the fine cuisine of Jacksonville. All right, my top 5 then. Number 5, Patrick Peterson. As always, I insist on the goodness of the old dogs out there until you prove me wrong. So I will continue to have him on here. Number 4 for me, and I see him going low on some other people, and you know what? I'm willing to forgive a bad year, especially since, again, maybe got another really good year coming out of him here soon enough. Richard Sherman. He's number 4. Do not ever underestimate the man scorned.
Not on my list.
What?
Not on my list.
I know. I don't care. He's on mine. Everyone's writing him off after like 1.5 bad seasons, and I'm not there.
He's just coming off a serious injury, man.
I know. I know.
I never would bet against Richard Sherman, but if we're talking about top five, top 10 guys that I want on my team in 2018, a guy coming off of an Achilles tear is not one of them.
Don't you ever talk about him. Don't you ever talk about him.
I'll talk about him. I'll talk about Marvin Harrison. You can
number three.
Marvin Harrison.
Number three, Jalen Ramsey. And I'm not going to mute that out. I'm going to let you dig your own grave. Jalen Ramsey's very good. He's also a rookie. He's also going to be entering his sophomore year. And I'm kind of even terrified putting him at number three because I don't know what's going to happen. Number two, Marcus Peters. Really good. I don't have anything else to say there. He's really good. He's probably going to be even better next year. He had a really hot start next year, and I think he's going to improve on that in 2018. Number one, I'm with Jeremy, AJ Bouye.
Uh-oh. What?
Uh-oh, I'm wrong.
Yeah, exactly.
This is weird.
All right, Ryan, what you got for me?
All right, well, I just finished my list. So number five, I have Marcus Peters. Something that I don't think any of us have really touched on yet is, you know, cornerbacks, obviously, their primary goal is to, you know, limit the amount of times that the receiver lined up across from them or in their vicinity when they're in zone coverage is to stop them from catching the ball. But, like, a couple of my guys up here, like, I prioritize, like, your ability to kind of do everything, too, though. So, like, in terms of run defense, we haven't talked a whole lot about that, but Marcus Peters was he's a pretty good run defender, and he's got great ball skills, too. So he actually graded out with an 82.2 run defense grade on Pro Football Focus, and that was 13th best among cornerbacks. So Peters is my number five. My number four is Marshawn Lattimore. I think that kind of what we've already, Jeremy alluded to, you know, a really high grade on PFF. He was a rookie sensation. I think he's only going to get better. He's the star of that really talented Saints secondary. Number three is Darius Slay. What can't be said about him? Eight interceptions. I don't know. Over or under six interceptions this year for Darius Slay?
I'm going to go probably under. See, here's the thing, and this is why I held it back, Darius Slay back a little bit on mine. And I know Jeremy and I argued about this before you came on while we've been sitting here in the lobby here. But the one thing that puts Slay back in my eyes is that, you know, he had a good interception rate. He had a good passer rating allowed. But I think he was like 28th in yards per game. He allowed like 43 yards per game. And Jeremy will say, well, how many times is he getting targeted over there? But I thought the narrative we had been going on was they're throwing away from Darius Slay. So honestly, in the fog of war that are stats, I don't know, but I'm just kind of curious, like what, like if we, besides the interceptions, because you say here, Ryan, you look for the full picture. What is it for Darius Slay for you? Is it the interceptions or is it just a full package?
I think it's a little bit of both. I mean, he also, you know, the eight interceptions are great, but he had 34 pass deflections too. I mean, that was, I believe that was tops in the NFL, right?
Yep.
It's got to be up there, yeah.
By eight. No one was within eight.
Yeah, so I mean, you know, in terms of passes defended and interceptions, I mean, nobody's doing it better than Darius Slay. And then add into the fact that I think he's a really sound tackler. Like, he's not a guy who, you know, he's not like the Deion Sanders of the world, who Deion Sanders is incredible in his own right, but Deion Sanders would also say, like, you know, I'm not tackling anybody. My shoulders aren't for tackling. No. That you're making business decisions there, but like Darius Slay, I mean, he's a solid sound tackler who, I mean, any qualms about that?
Nope. That was his your number three, right?
That was my number three. Yep. My number two is Jalen Ramsey, which makes my number one Casey Hayward.
I'm disappointed in your own list.
No, I just can't. I can't believe that Bouye was number one for both you guys.
Is there a reason you have Ramsey over Bouye?
Just because I think that Ramsey's really going to take that second year leap this year. Like, I mean, the third year. Yeah. I mean, just you know, playing two seasons, and especially, you know, having a. I think he seems like a guy who he's very competitive. And I think that getting to the precipice and getting all the way to, you know, the AFC Championship game, I think that like that's only going to motivate him even more. And I think that he's a guy who just he shuts down other teams like top receivers. Like, but I mean, you can kind of say that about any of the guys like near the top of our list, right? So at the end of the day, I think you're almost kind of like splitting hairs with a lot of these guys.
Oh, no, I think definitely not a lot of difference between 1 and 8 on my list, I would say.
Everyone I would say 1 to 10 in my list. Like, I included Patrick Robinson because he stood out to me as, like, a slot corner in particular, as just a nickel player in particular. But just, like, besides that, I can't really find much separation for any of these guys. It's funny.
Difficult.
Yeah, well, this is the other thing I wanted to bring up, too, because we mentioned Casey Hayward a bit, but, like, I've seen some lists include the person playing opposite him, Trevor Williams, as well. Like, it's more, and I mean, a lot of us have both Jalen Ramsey and A.J. Bouye on here, so it's like, it's more like units right now.
And that, well, that's the thing, like, too. Yeah, cornerback stats are highly dependent on how the supporting cast is performing, right? Like,
yeah,
if one of your cornerbacks is locking down one of the other wide receivers, you're going to get targeted a lot, which means you could get a lot of interceptions, breakdown pass knockdowns, or you might give up a ton of yards. You might also get a ton of interceptions because your front four is generating a bunch of pressure, forcing bad throws. So
yeah, it's kind of a paradigm shift, whereas it's like, okay, it's trying to get it to your number one. But all of a sudden, you know, a few years ago, the rise of these great cornerbacks, suddenly it means like, OK, well, where can we throw if to get away from that number one corner? And now the war has kind of caught up, and now it's like, OK, well, now we need to have two good corners.
Right. So. And I mean, yeah. we can pretend all we want, but we haven't watched extensive film on all these guys, because guess what? You watch the TV version. You don't even get to see the cornerbacks for 90% of the play.
Yeah, unless it's like the ball's going towards them, you're not seeing them.
Right. And so, you know, we can pretend all we want that we've all watched the all 22 of all 10 of these guys. We haven't. But, you know, based on the metrics we have, based on what we have seen of these guys, all these guys are very close to each other. And absolutely, all these guys have the potential to be top 10 guys, or maybe they drop out for a year. Cornerback position is so flimsy. And I think a lot of times we get hung up on like single plays. Like if Darius Slay gets beat for one big play, like a couple of years ago, he had that bad game against Denver and Peyton Manning on Sunday Night Football. And everyone's like, yeah, Darius Slay's trash. Yeah, Darius Slay's trash. He's trash. It's just those big plays stick in your head because they're big plays. But every cornerback in the league gets beat. Every cornerback in the league. So it's just who happens to do it the least and who happens to make it the amount of plays on their own are the guys that stick out. And that's why I think Darius Slay was so high on both you and I's list, outside of the fact that we're both Detroit Lions fans.
I think that's it for our list cast. Jeremy, you should be posting these. Actually, no, wait, don't post them, because then people won't listen to the podcast.
I never post them. I just keep them for blackmailing purposes.
Pretty much. Do we even have, speaking of that, we should go through our faux pas from last year next time.
I'd have to pull up my old computer, but yep.
Pretty much. Well, we're taking a break right now because we're over time. We're going right back to the Wayback Machine this week. Ooh, it's not a pretty one. We'll be right back. Wayback Machine. Someone's going to eventually make a theme for us like that, trying to use my voice, something, I don't know. If you had told me in a vacuum that Matthew Stafford would throw for 130 more yards than Drew Brees, I would say the Lions are winning that game, right? I'm right. Lions 38, New Orleans Saints 52. And I think we've been alluding to this game for probably since the start. We have the Wayback Machine on. Where is the point where you realize the Lions just aren't going the distance in 2017? And I think, Ryan, you said it was this game for you. Like, without a doubt, this was it that broke you.
Yeah. I mean, how could this game not break you? This was the longest, like, I mean, it was a long game. Like, it was what? It was like a 4.5 hour game. It was long.
Very long game. Like, this is why you don't watch, like, Washington State football while Mike Leach is the head coach, because the downside of these guys throwing the ball all the time means the games go insanely long. I learned that from college football, and I started seeing it here, and I'm like, okay, no, I've seen this before. This is going to be ratchet.
Yeah, and who knows actually how long this game was, right? But like, it just felt like the longest game because there were so many emotions evoked from one
and
football
game.
And
there was 90 points scored in this game.
Yep.
12 touchdowns. Holy
yeah, God. Yeah. This well, game. I mean, but again, I want to address the issue is that, again, Matt Stafford outgains Drew Brees by over 100 yards. And it's like, okay, well, then what happened? And then you see the rest of the stats. Stafford threw 3 interceptions. Drew Brees threw 2. But then also helping out the Saints was Mark Ingram running for over 110 yards in this game.
Alvin Kamara almost adding 100 of his own.
75 yards from Alvin Kamara as well. So on the ground, nearly 200 yards for the New Orleans Saints, which that's the difference right there. You want to talk about well-rounded on offense? Saints having 200, about the same number of yards on the ground as they did through the air. Whereas Stafford throwing 300 yards in the air. And let's check Detroit's rushing here. Oh, only about 60.
Yeah. I mean, the Saints outgained the Lions in this game despite Matthew Stafford almost throwing for 200 more yards.
Yep. Pretty much. And I think we just lost Ryan accidentally. So he will keep wrangling with this while we talk about this game. I'm going to go up with what Ryan was saying while we're waiting for him to get back. Like this game was deflating in so many ways. In the same way that I believe we saw from the Carolina game, the come from behind, we saw in this game, it was like what, 31-10 at halftime?
Yep.
It was bad.
It was really even worse later. It was 45-10.
Right, yeah, at least in the case of the Panthers for about a week, people would like be like, oh, but they almost came back and stole it from Carolina. In this case, no, it just,
Absolutely came close to coming back in this game, too. It was insane. They had the ball down 7 with 5 minutes left in this game. The second play of the drive, pick six.
Pick six, and then in the next drive, another interception.
Yeah. Well, at that point, like, they had just gotten desperate, and I don't know, the most frustrating part of this entire game was the pass deflections.
Mm-hmm.
So many batted balls at the line of scrimmage. In total, and this includes, you know, just regular passes defended, the Saints had 16 passes defended in this entire game. 16! I would say the average for a game is, like, 5-6. They had 10 more than that.
Yep.
The Lions' offensive line was clearly in shambles by this game. Stafford sacked 5 times. He also, I think, fumbled the ball a couple times, too. So Lions had 5 turnovers in this game. 5 turnovers to the Saints. I mean, the Lions made it easy on the Saints just by how disastrous this offense was early in the game with all the turnovers, with all the sacks, with all the batted balls. It was cuckoo. And then somehow the Lions worked their way back into the game. I don't think anyone at that point thought the Lions were actually going to win the game, even though they had the ball down a score with 5 minutes left. But baddie things were happening in this game, and I was out of it. Like, I was just like, even when they were coming back, I'm just like, this is such a stupid game. I hate everything about this game. I hate our offensive line. I hate Drew Brees. I hate our run defense. It was just a stupid game and a really frustrating way to go into the bye week, too.
Can I just say this, too? Because looking at the theme we've had here on the losses so far with the Lions, because I think the New Orleans game did break people from this idea that they should be record X when looking at this. But as you say, Jeremy, it was close going into the end, too. And I would argue there, like, is that basically the main difference between 2016 and 2017? You know, we talked about it all through 2016. It's like, how many more close games like this, these come from behinds, can the Lions have? And our answer that season was, well, quite a few of them.
Yeah.
And in this case, in 2017, it's, you can't keep doing that.
Absolutely. And that's what we were warned of all offseason, right? It's like, well, the Lions were 8-4 or something in one possession games in 2016. Like, that's going to regress to the mean. Most of the time, like, you can say Matthew Stafford's great in the fourth quarter, and he absolutely is, but it eventually catches up to you. Like, you put yourself in all these high pressure situations where there is zero room for leniency in terms of playing perfect. And Matthew Stafford can't play perfect all the time in the fourth quarter. It's just not going to happen. And so, yeah, I think it absolutely did catch up with them this year, and against Atlanta, like you said, against Carolina, and against New Orleans. And we're going to see it happen a couple more times this season, too.
Yeah, and just I don't know what really to do, too, when it's like, okay, you get put in these situations where he has to play perfect that late in the game, too. So, I mean, at one point this game, like, he threw an interception that made the game 45-10.
And it was around that time where I was thinking, why is he still playing?
Yeah.
That's a good, I forgot about that storyline. There was basically everyone else on Twitter was like, why is Matthew Stafford still playing down 35 points?
Well, he's playing because in the NFL, like, yeah, no, it could be like 100-10 and they would still be playing Matt Stafford, because that's what happens in the NFL. No one puts in the backups. No one throws in the towel. Like, people just keep doing it because they're all dumb or whatever.
But
I was getting frustrated. Context matters.
Yeah. He was getting hit pretty well, too.
He was. All that is definitely true. But in retrospect, like, Matthew Stafford had the ball in his hands with 5 minutes to go down 7.
Yeah.
Because Matthew Stafford was in the game.
And I think that it was a pure stroke of dumb luck that even happened, when you have a game where A'shaun Robinson has a pick six and Agnew has a 74-yard punt, punt return for a touchdown.
Yep.
That's so true. Like,
yeah, in a way, but, really, Stafford did not orchestrate the comeback all that much. Now that you bring that up. He did. Right. I mean, they scored two touchdowns. They got them within 3 scores, and then then came the punt return touchdown. Then came A'shaun's pick six. But yeah.
So
moving. Go on.
Just real quick. My point was that Stafford was in there. Yeah, Jeremy. 5 minutes left. Whether or not he orchestrated it, it seems like at the end of the day they may have made the right decision. But I still thought that was one of the worst decisions that Jim Caldwell has ever made. Like, as a Lions coach. Like, I mean, there have been a few of them.
Just wait till we get to the Bengals game.
Well, okay. Yeah, we'll get to the Bengals game. But I'm just saying that, like, in this season, like, this irked me a lot. Like, it really bothered me just because Greg Robinson got hurt, Rick Wagner got hurt, Emmett Clear. Like, it was getting to the point where they weren't going to have any offensive linemen to come into the game.
It's true.
Yep.
So.
That brings us into other parts of this team. As you said, this was a game with a lot of injuries there that just this is where the offensive line starts to break down, and you can definitely see it, because as I said, Matt Stafford, he got sacked 5 times in this game. Meanwhile, another narrative coming up, because Drew Brees was perfect from the pocket, didn't get touched at all this game.
Yep. And I mean, we were worried about it all offseason. This is one thing that I think Lions fans got right, is just, where's the pass rush going to come from? And with Kerry Hyder getting the preseason injury and Ezekiel Ansah being on again, off again, the Lions just didn't have a guy that could rush the passer. And by this point in the season, we also have Haloti Ngatagon, so we're not getting, a guy clogging up the middle. And yeah, I mean, our hopes were rest on Anthony Zettel at this point. And I know you love him, Chris, but He's never going to be the consistent pass rusher that this team needs.
No, this wasn't a good game for the boy. No, it was really just like A'shaun Robinson out there. That was it for the Lions' defensive line, right?
Yeah. And I mean, if we're in a time machine, I know it goes backwards, but the time machine, if we want to move it forwards, like, what much has changed about the Lions' defensive line? Like, this is still, I think, a legitimate concern that I think a lot of Lions fans should have.
Sure.
Yeah. Like, this is why I can't, this is why I put out the prediction that I did. And it's why that as much as people talk about, the changes that Matt Patricia might bring, it's the groceries still look pretty, pretty stale. They still look a little brown on the edges. So I don't know how well you can mix up. You can make a roux. But when you're going to start putting vegetables into this gumbo, I'm not sure how that's going to look. I'm just saying. What else about this Saints game? Marvin Jones and Golden Tate both. This was the first game where they actually got like equal amount of production. I would say both about close to 100 yards receiving. This became a thing too, didn't it? Like we kept waiting for, I think, Marvin Jones or Golden Tate, one of the two, to break 100. No, the Amir Abdullah was the one we were doing that with. That's right. Sorry, ignore me.
This was kind of like the breakout game for Marvin Jones, though, because prior to this, he hadn't had more than 54 yards in a game. And I think this is where the peak of maybe we paid Marvin Jones too much. How are we going to get out of this contract next year? Talk started. But he hits 96 games in this game with a score. And spoiler alert, he only has less than 85 yards in a game three more times the rest of the season. So this was kind of the start of something.
That ridiculous touchdown catch, too.
That's right. Oh, was this like he did a spinning thing or something? I can't remember.
Yeah, this was the one that was in
one-handed
in the end zone. Yeah.
Yeah. That's right.
Yeah. Yeah. So like that catch, like two catches that stand out are this one and obviously the
Chicago.
The too many men on the field. No, the too many men on the field against Minnesota.
Oh, the Chicago.
On Thanksgiving.
That's good too, though.
Yeah, that's a good one too, but. I mean, well, Tate got hurt in this game. Remember, he had a shoulder injury.
That's right.
He didn't come back in. Glover Quinn had the concussion.
God, that's right. This game was horrible. This is why
this game was from hell. Yeah. Oh
my, this yeah, was like we the house. All... This was the House of Horrors game. Yeah.
That's crazy that I forgot all that because Ian Rappaport. There's no way this guy's Golden Tate's going to be out at least 3 or 4 weeks. He plays the next game, right? Or does he sit one out?
No,
well, I mean, he had the bye week, so I think, yeah.
So he had the bye week and he came back. Pittsburgh.
Yeah, he played in Pittsburgh.
Glover Quinn's injury was scary as hell, and I think we were all certain that dude was not going to come back even with the bye week, and he did too. But, yeah, this game just got progressively worse as the game went on. Even when the Lions were making that comeback, it didn't really feel good.
It felt like fool's gold. Like, that's the difference. Like, when the Lions had a chance to come from behind in 2016, it felt real. Every time they tried coming from behind in 2017, it felt earth-sad. It felt false. It felt like that it's just not going to happen. It felt like, okay, this is going to take a Lions fan coke dream to be a thing.
That's why I wanted Stafford to be on the bench. So I was like, everybody else is getting hurt. Let's not have him.
You were just worried about the juju at that point.
Yeah, like it was bad. It was New Orleans voodoo going on down there. Bad. No good. Which was a total like 180 from last year. Because do you remember the Saints game the year prior to this?
Lions demolished them. Yeah,
it was the most complete game I think I'd seen the Lions play ever.
it was like one of the only games last year that actually felt like consistent start to finish in a good way for the Lions. All the wins had been come from behind and all the losses had just been pretty well resounding thuds as the Lions machine broke down. But that Saints game in 2016 was the first time where it's like, okay, the Lions are winning wire to wire. They might be able to actually do that. And that was the only time they did it that season.
It was literally the only time they did it. But they did it at a time where it was like, it was later in the season and me thinking like, all right, good. And also, I was leaving for Punta Cana the next day too. So that was probably why it helped.
A very blessed time for the POD cast, I might say.
A very blessed time. But it's just so weird how, because it seemed like, maybe they kind of exercise some of those, like, you know, demons by going down to New Orleans and playing a really good football game. And then this game happens and it's like, I never want to go to New Orleans ever again.
Yeah, I think the Lions had actually won two in a row up until that point.
They did. They did, because they had another close. In 2015, they had another close. It was a close game in the Superdome, like the year prior, 2015.
Yeah.
But they won that one. Yeah.
I just remember
that was the one where Stafford did the Ray Lewis dance in the post game.
That was Monday Night Football. Yeah.
And it, like you said, it felt like the Lions had kind of lifted that curse because obviously the Saints handed them their first playoff loss in 10 years back in 2011 in an ugly game.
Pretty convincingly.
In a pretty convincing manner. And New Orleans just seemed unbeatable on the road for a while there in the Superdome. And the fact that the Lions had won two in a row was like, okay, we got this now. Like, this is a team we can finally beat on the road. And then last year happened, and it's like, oh, it's still hard to win there. There's still some weird shit voodoo going on in New Orleans. And
well, it wasn't even just weird. It was bizarre, but at the same time, the Lions just got beat. They just got beat. They got beat real bad. They got beat so bad on the ground. I let Mark Ingram and Alvin Kamara run all over them. They got beat so bad on the pass rush to let Drew Brees sit unmolested in the pocket to throw for 20 out of 30 to complete two out of three ain't bad, as respected Meatloaf would say. They were in a position where they didn't need to force Drew Brees to throw to beat them. They got beat. As I said, this was a 45-10 game at one point. And that's why, you know, you can say it looks close, but every other indicator just looked like this was a team that did not belong on the same field as the New Orleans Saints.
Yeah, it's weird, though. I mean, when a Lions team that had been so careful with the ball throughout 2016 and really most of 2017, when they have five turnovers in the game, something wacky's happened. And I don't think the talent disparity between these two teams was as big as the score deficit was for most of this game. But you're not wrong in the fact that the Saints wiped the floor with them on this day.
Yeah. Matt Prater missed a field goal, too, just adding to the juju.
Wacky game.
Yep. All right, let's get out of the Wayback Machine. Do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do. Present day, 2018. Well, you all know, I say we read some mailbag questions. I just want to say, though, we're skipping the bye week, obviously, next time we go in the Wayback Machine. Pittsburgh's coming up, though. That's not going to feel good either. Thankfully, after that, we get some home cooking, but I think it's home cooking with big asterisks next to it, because I'm looking at what's coming up. Like, Chicago, yeah, you can feel good about that. We own the Bears, but I mean, I don't... Can I even bring up Green Bay after the week Lions fans have been having on Twitter and on our own PrideDetroit.com website?
That'll be 2 weeks in the future. Things will change, right? Between then and now?
Maybe. I don't think so. All I'll say is that, like, I tried to explain it and my tweets became fodder for Packers Twitter. And
congrats, you're a Packers fan now.
I guess, maybe. I don't know.
Oh, you just admitted it. You hear that? No wonder we're getting all these bad reviews.
Do we have more bad reviews?
No, we don't, actually.
Okay, thank God. It's more my bit, though, is just to act flustered when we get bad reviews. I don't really care about them. Anyway, we're out of the way back machine. Let's move on to the mailbag. Short POD cast this week. Coming up next, your questions. Mail time. Hashtag AskPOD. As always, get your questions in fresh and often. We will read them as many as possible, as long as they catch our eye or maybe do something different for us, either about the Lions or about anything else in the world you want to ask. We will try to honor it. Jeremy, we always start with the reviews, though, and I make you read them for purposes that I do not know myself, but we've just got into this habit and we keep doing it. So please read our reviews.
It's to give the people a voice, whether it's a good voice or a bad voice. And I wasn't completely honest with you last segment. We do have a review. It is 4 stars. It is not completely complimentary, but let's get into it.
See, that's the thing, is like, we're grading on, I grade ourselves on like the Uber and Lyft scale. So anything less than a 5 stars feels like,
feels like an F.
A damnation.
Well, this one is from The Volcano. He says, pretty solid. 4 stars, says, been listening for a while and is definitely one of the best Lions podcasts out there. One thing preventing me from giving it a 5th star is the fact that one of the hosts is close to unbearable to listen to. Don't want to hurt feelings and say who. Cheers and go Lions.
Well, Jeremy, the people have spoken. You've got to go.
All right. You get voted me off the island.
You are the weakest link.
Oh, wow. We are pulling all early 2000s reference.
Jesus.
Just want to keep going.
Some Regis Philbin, Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. You want to phone a friend, Jeremy?
I'll just dial up TRL. See, I don't know. I'm out.
What's our next review?
That was it. We only got one this week.
Ooh. Well. Interesting. Interesting. I'm mostly saying interesting so I can keep dig up our questions, which I just had here and now they're gone. All right, here we go. Let's start with this one. We had this one from Mike Holman actually almost about a week ago. We got this one before our last PODcast recording, but I failed to read it. I apologize. And now we shall read it now. And this, I mean, I want to do this one because I can actually answer some of this, but he asks us, what are your favorite original Xbox games? Maybe top five. Now, for the sake of ListCast, and I don't know who all in, I had an original Xbox. Any of you guys have original Xbox? You did as well. Wow.
No, I didn't. I was PS and PlayStation and Dreamcast. All about that life at the time.
You were the Dreamcast boy. You were the sad boy with the Dreamcast.
Oh, the extremely happy boy. Anyone who had a Dreamcast will tell you that they were not sad.
So you were happy for like about a year, and then all of a sudden it got discontinued. And now, then you can't tell me you were happy after that.
Well, no, then I traded up for a PS2, but only because they stopped making games. I think Dreamcast owners are some of the most excitable gamers that I've ever seen. They were very happy with that system.
I will say there was a couple of Dreamcast was one of those systems where it's like there was a game I was looking for it that was only in Japan, but I remember this game because it was like a Mobile Suit Gundam game, but it was only in Japan. And I just know there was a store in Toledo that did imports and like really bad like fan dubs over it or something, and I was trying to find it so I could play it on Dreamcast.
Jeremy, weren't you a Shenmue player?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Shenmue. I've had the little thing that you put in the middle of the Dreamcast controller that, like, if you're playing NBA whatever, it would like say stuff like say boom shakalaka on it when you slam dunked and stuff like that.
Isn't that window for like the Sonic games? There was like a little Tamagotchi type thing there.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah.
All that sort of stuff.
Anyway, to his question, for the original original Xbox games. What's your favorite here, Ryan?
It might be my favorite game of all time, but Halo 2.
Halo 2 is so good. Yeah.
Like it was a perfect game. I feel like the reason that it does, dude, it holds up well today. Like it's just like it's like the pinnacle of like first person shooters.
I think, I agree there. Like everything in there from like the level design, I thought they improved on it from Halo. They definitely improved on the guns from Halo 1. They definitely improved on the multiplayer from Halo 1.
Oh, dude, Halo 2 multiplayer. Oh my God.
Dude, getting that sword. People used to complain all the time about that sword, but that sword was a game changer. But that kind of, that did set the bar there. And even on the single player, like I thought that was the sweet spot where Halo's story was the best right before it went just like completely stupid on you.
Right.
It was really good. They had a really good model in two with everything there, switching between Master Chief and the Arbiter and all the rest.
Yep. Adding more vehicles too, like being able to drive the Ghosts and driving the Warthog and gunning on the Warthog and sitting and passenger.
Just the Arbiter, just having David Johnson was, no, that's not his name.
David Cross.
No. I he's in like every video game now.
Oh yeah, I know who you're talking about. He's the voice of the president on Rick and Morty.
Yeah, no, he's everywhere now. But that was like his first big breakthrough role was the Arbiter.
Yeah. Halo 2 is great. I mean, what was your favorite game on the original Xbox? Was it the Catwoman game?
No, it was not the Catwoman game. The thing about the original Xbox is that there are some games on there that were really niche because PlayStation 2 just put a stranglehold on the console. Xbox really didn't come into its own until the next generation.
Yeah, where it actually had, was where it,
yeah, was where it hit its stride. Yeah.
Yeah, let's get into 360, baby.
But I think my favorite, so it's a moderately obscure game. as befitting of me, but it was called Phantom Crash. It was a Japanese game where you went into an arena with a little kind of hovercraft robot and you would just blow stuff up. It was repetitive. The boss fights were hard as hell, but it had a just amazing soundtrack to it of just some really cool, just kind of Japanese rock right before it got that was like in that kind of vein where, I mean, I'm going to show some of my weeb side, but like it was kind of in that Foolie Cooley type of like really good kind of underground stuff. The story was really odd. It was like some weird post-apocalyptic Japan where everyone was just running around in Shibuya Terminal with these robots just blowing each other up. But there were these AIs modeled after animals and stuff. And
this is the most Chris game I've ever heard in my entire life.
It's really, if you can, I wish I could say go find it on emulator, but I don't know if there is an Xbox emulator. But the big thing and why it's called Phantom Crash is that you could go invisible. Like with the robots, and that was the big thing, is that you and the AI spent most of the game like invisible, and if you caught someone out in the open, you could blow them up in 2 seconds. But it was tense and it was exciting. And besides that, like, maybe is it too much of a cop out? I said my second favorite was probably the Metal Gear Solid 2 port subsistence or whatever the fuck it was called.
On. They did one for it was Substance.
It was Metal Gear Solid 2 plus some like VR mode missions.
Chris, I just want to know how we can get you to talk this enthusiastically about football.
I talk this enthusiastically about football.
You absolutely do not.
Just not always with the Lions. I don't know. Here's the thing is like, I've been doing this for a few years now. And as I've been finding out with my brain, like after a while, I get tired of talking about the same thing every now and then. And I just need to switch things up. And I don't talk about, if I talk about video games every day, I would probably be a little less enthused because I would have gotten these stories out already. But this is only the first question. And we are now 8 minutes in. So we should move on to the next thing. I would love to do a video game podcast though.
I bet they don't have any of those yet.
All right. Mike, okay, hold up. Armchair Boehm 3, who I'm surprised I'm actually getting this question because I thought this guy just speaks purely through memes, by the way, he has interacted with me in the past. Who would win in an armchair, in an arm wrestling competition, A'shaun Robinson or Devin Kennard?
A'shaun Robinson.
Yeah, is anyone not, like, I can't.
It's A'shaun. It's my big beautiful boy.
I can't pick.
Would you ever bet? Would you ever bet against A'shaun in anything?
No. He's big.
I'm just afraid that he would somehow hear this and like stare me to death because his stare is so scary alone. That yeah, he wins. No one can beat him in an arm wrestling contest. Nobody.
I'm gonna get his jersey. I'm just gonna get A'shaun's jersey at this point. I don't care if it just says Robinson. I think it's the right move.
You should get A'shaun on the back of it though.
I feel like we should have first names. Did you see the NFL like turn down someone? I forget his name now, but he has like, he is actually an MD, but they won't allow him to put MD on the back of his jersey.
Yeah, his name is Laurent Duvernay-Tardif. He wanted to add MD to the jersey, but of course the NFL sticking with their strict policy for no good reason.
Who does he play for? Was it the Chiefs?
Chiefs, yeah.
I mean, yeah, he's got a medical degree. That's hard. You should be able to put it on there. They let have Tate run around as Tate the Third.
For juniors or seniors? Why the hell not at MD? I feel like they think it's a slippery slope, but I don't see it that way.
Yeah, if we get someone...
A slippery slope for what, though? Like, what other, like, titles are people gonna... I mean, maybe hopefully we get some, like, sirs.
I was gonna say, if we get some, like, Englishman who comes over and he's, like, a really good football player and he's, like, Order of the British Empire, you better be allowed to put, like, OBE on the back or something. If he gets knighted, he should absolutely be, you know, Fauntleroy OBE or whatever is on his last name is. I don't know. Ryan Collins at Shafty Von Hack, is there such a thing as light beer that doesn't taste like water?
Yeah, it's called Miller Lite.
Yeah, baby.
Miller Latte. Oh.
That was the thing. Not, but I can't do Miller Lite.
I'll do it, but I will say when Ryan first dropped it on me that he calls it Miller Latte, that was the weirdest thing to happen, and I'm still like bugged out by
still
it.
Shook.
Yeah, like it just it feels weird. It feels like suddenly it just for whatever reason I'm just like it just the vision of it disgusts me.
Plenty of those in my future Wednesdays for trivia. Reisman gets back.
Hamza asking us your takes on whether college athletes, football players in particular, should get paid.
Oh boy. Well, there goes the rest of our podcast. Go ahead, Chris.
Sure. Why not? I don't know. I don't know at this point, man. I don't know. Like it feels like there's no new ground for us to tread in that regard. I really wanted to answer this, but I don't know. I don't have a pie in prepared, so we're just going to leave it there. Ty Finch, I saw a guy microwaving a Pop-Tart at work the other day and questioned humanity. I guess this isn't a question per se, but it has the word in it. I guess a question would be, what is the worst way you've ever seen a good food be ruined, i.e. ketchup on steak?
Ooh, that's a really good question.
That is a good question.
Well, hold on. We gotta discount everything Alex Reno does, because that would be too easy of an answer here if I used any example of what Alex does. Yeah,
I have an answer. I think I may have talked about this on a previous podcast, but I have a friend who put sugar in his spaghetti.
Oh God, that's right.
I think I remember this. Yes, and I was like, as an Italian American, just incredibly grossed out.
Just yeah, I mean,
like I want to take this audio clip and send it to like Italians, the Twitter account Italians Mad at Food,
and it's. If you guys recall, like, it's not just like, you know, if he has like a bottle of like, or, you know, if he has, you know, marinara sauce and, you know, noodles, but like, it's like all things that are like noodles plus pasta sauce. So like SpaghettiOs that gets sugar.
Jesus.
Yeah. Like it just, the first time I ever saw it, like I almost lost my mind. Like I almost like went over and grabbed the bag. Like, what are you doing? Like, do you think that's salt? Like what's going on?
I've got an answer in here. I don't want to say it's the worst thing that's happened, but it is a sibling story. So my sister and I, back when we were growing up in Toledo, and this speaks to kind of our culinary taste, I guess, but we loved Olga's Kitchen, you know, the shitty, Birmingham, Michigan Euros.
Yeah.
The legit Greek restaurant.
But that was our first encounter with Euros was through Olga's, and I liked their bread because it was nice and sweet. It was yogurt sauce, and when I was a lot younger, the yogurt sauce there did not offend me as much as tzatziki. So I just grew up on it, and I kind of made my own stuff. But she wouldn't eat the Euro meats at Olga's. She would get the three cheese Olga's.
I got that as a kid every time.
Hold up. But then she would get them, and then she would take like half of the cheese out of them because she thought there was too much.
There was too much. Looking back on it, if I were to look at a three cheese Olga right now, I don't think I'm going to eat it. There was way too much cheese.
That was just a pile of grease on some bread.
And it was literally dripping with grease, too. Like, if you squeezed it, you could have, like, filled a 12-ounce fountain drink with it.
So, yeah, it's not the worst thing, because as you say, Jeremy, there's a reason to get rid of that much of the three cheese put there, but just... I mean, she would start off with like we'd start off with the Snackers too, and those things are great. Although, actually, you want to ruin those Snackers, like you do what she does, which basically scrape off all the spices from them. So just, you know, cooked bread bits. We did terrible things at Olga's, terrible, terrible things. I still miss it though.
I'm trying to think what I mean. The right answer is ketchup on steak. That's an atrocity. Like, that's an act of war to me. But I think I go with padding the pizza with a napkin. I really don't like that move.
Oh God, no, never do that. Never, ever. And don't use a fork either.
I don't care about that, as long as the pizza's going into you. But if you're making the commitment to get a pizza and it's greasy, who are you fooling by padding it with a napkin?
But you just got done condoning taking out grease from a three cheese Olga.
No, I didn't say you should take out the grease. I'm just saying like back then I wouldn't have taken out the cheese. Now I just wouldn't order it. But if I would, I'd probably take out some cheese.
That's okay. Different. Fair enough. N.E. Shaw asking us, do you consider yourselves Michiganders, Michiganians, or trolls?
Do people call
Michiganders trolls? Because I'd like to be called a troll.
You've been called a troll plenty of times.
I think I'm the only person who's allowed to answer this question, considering both of you two are Cali boys. So,
I'm in Michigan now, so you're wrong.
Well, where are you physically right now? And where have you been physically for the past however many years?
Laying on the floor.
Oh, this got sad.
Like Natalie, George Michael.
Natalie and Marulia? Is that the right person?
I don't even know what I'm talking about. I'm so lost.
Tony Hawk's Underground.
Torn? Who sings Torn? Is it Natalie and Marulia? I think it is.
Next question from Paul Jeremiah. What do you guys think of the Weezer cover of Africa? Now, this came out a little bit ago, but I don't think we've answered this question yet. We have not answered this question yet.
It's bad.
You can speak for all of us. Yeah, go ahead.
It's bad. It's real bad.
See, like, I wanted you to answer that, Jeremy, because I think my bias against Weezer is pretty well known, so I'm glad to hear it coming from you.
I mean, they didn't do anything to really change it, and that's what you're supposed to do with a cover. You don't just rehash it, because then it just sounds like nothing different. And I don't know. I've been very cold on Weezer ever since Ratitude, which was just a god-awful album.
Yeah, I agree with you that you got to change it up. And maybe it's just because I've been listening to some of my country stations and I've been listening to a lot of Johnny Cash. And I've been going through those, like, the American albums he does, like American 3, 4, 5, which he put out those albums, like, after he knew that he only had, like, a year or two to live. But he would do covers in there. Like, he did a cover of Depeche Mode Personal Jesus and Desperado. And I think he even did, like, a Nirvana cover in there as well. But that's exactly what I want to hear. I want to hear like Johnny Cash putting a folk spin on Personal Jesus and Hurt. That's a cover.
What was a worse cover? This one by Weezer or Taylor Swift covering September by Earth, Wind & Fire?
Oh, God. Those are awful for two very different reasons, I feel like, but they're both equally awful.
It's Taylor Swift. It's gotta be Taylor Swift.
Yeah.
Because she made it her own, but she also made it the worst song in the world.
But the other cover I really like is The Man Who Sold the World, David Bowie, but I love the Nirvana cover. It's probably one of the only Nirvana songs I really enjoy. But they didn't really do too much different with that, though. But I don't know how you feel about that.
I don't know that one. Sorry.
Really? That was like the best thing they ever did on them. That was like the MTV Unplugged song was Nirvana's cover of that.
I'm not a big Nirvana fan.
Sorry. Okay, neither am I. JJ2672, how about that German goal on Saturday? What were your thoughts on that game and that goal? So for those who weren't watching the World Cup, Germany was down to 10 men in like what, the final minute of that game against, who were they playing again? Shit.
I don't remember. Cut this and...
No, I'm not. I don't want to do cuts. I'm going to look this up real quick. The problem with the World Cup is that it just moves so fast that I just keep forgetting. Okay, oh, Sweden. So, right. Yeah, it was 1-1, and Germany had gotten... They were playing 10 on 11. So, power play to Sweden, I guess. And they score the goal in, like, stoppage time to go ahead. And it was a rocket of a goal. Is no one else watching World Cup? Is it just me?
No, I watched. That was the one that was like a set piece, right? Like,
yeah,
he set it up, and then he like did a little tap to his buddy who stopped the ball, and then he kicked it in. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
That's a really exciting way to describe that play. He kicked it. Yeah, the other guy stopped him, and then he kicked it in. No, that was I was watching live when that happened. I screamed out loud, which I very rarely do during soccer, and it was exciting. And yeah, like. This was Germany's last chance, right? Like they were in danger of getting knocked out of the stage round or the group round.
I hate Germany in the World Cup because they do shit like this.
Well, maybe they'll screw up later. They didn't start out the tournament so well.
No, no. What happens after this is they put up another touchdown on Brazil and just laugh their way to the finals. It's what's going to happen again, because that's what they always do. And it's so annoying. And the only comfort I have is that Italy cannot get embarrassed by them this year, because Italy isn't in the goddamn World Cup. Thank you for listening to the Pride Detroit PODcast. We are on iTunes and Stitcher. Our main theme was produced by Ryan Shepherd. You can find him on Twitter and on SoundCloud at I am Brian Shepherd, IamBrianSheppard. Thanks a lot to him. Check out his stuff. He's been great. He gave us Victory Monday, so go check him out. That's I am Brian Shepherd. And thank you for everyone who keeps listening and makes us one of the greatest Lions podcasts possible. Y'all are awesome. See you, Starside.